do you do?
It's called Polycast.
On the internet, is it?
Welcome to a special episode of Polycast, the official podcast of a Poulton Civilization site, celebrating and anticipating the second Civilization IV expansion pack, Beyond the Sword.
And this is going to sound very geeky, as if it hasn't already. I don't know if I'd be showing my age or my interest, but...
Unfortunately,
sorry. How many people... I'm not going to say this. How many people have ever watched Captain Planet and the Planeteers? There, I said it.
I've seen it.
Woohoo!
Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, copy.
I am your powers combined.
That's the one. So, taking off on that theme, I've come up with a from blah. Here's blah with the power of... whatever.
Oh, great.
You see. So hopefully this works. If anyone is insulted, good. Bad.
I got
bad. You shouldn't be insulted.
I got thick skin. I'm cool here.
I don't give a damn. I'm a mod.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm a management. You can't insult me.
I'm senior management. I can never be insulted.
You ever been in the field? You know what's going on. Okay. Go ahead. Sorry.
That's right.
Speaking of which, why don't we start with you?
Sure enough.
Ming. All right. So, from a secret hideout somewhere in the United States with the power of the banding rod, Ming.
Hi. Don't look behind you.
Oh, hi.
From the Netherlands with from the Netherlands with the power of free sieving, Cap TVK.
Hello. My real name is Thomas. I'm from the Netherlands. Also a Sith fan and free sieve user. I also have a confession to make. I only recently started playing Civ 4 because I only acquired a PC around January this year that's capable of playing it.
We hear your confession and you are forgiven. From Maine originally with the power of Factum, Grand Patrol.
Good evening. Just pleasure to be here.
From Greece with the power of Demo Gaming, Kijin.
Hello, everyone.
Tikanis.
From Maryland with the power of Diplo Gaming, Aussie KP.
That would be me, and my name is Alex, and I don't really have anything witty to add.
Sounded pretty witty to me.
You'll fit in nicely. From the Northeast United States with the power of Civ Group Ship, Metalliturtle.
My name is Mark, and I'm from Wisconsin.
So, from the United Kingdom with the power of multiplayer, Snotty.
Hello.
Actually, he sucks as an MP player.
Oh. Today is a good day.
You'll get revenge on me later, I know.
So, now that we've gotten to me, the rest of you can go, because this is going to take a while. So, I, from Ontario, Canada, with the power of diplomacy, or is that shiny things? I'm Dan Q, also known as Daniel Quick in real life. But you knew that.
This is not real life?
No,
no,
afraid
it's not.
Polly is my world, people. Don't bust it.
Another sick puppy.
That's right. I just could quit coming here if I wanted to. I just don't want to.
So we do have our topics. We do have topics on this show. It's true. We're going to be talking about big time Civilization IV expansion Beyond the Sword announced.
Amen.
Yay!
Yay!
Hoorah!
But... just before we start that, throughout the show, I'm going to go through a top 10 clues that you are too obsessed with Civilization IV. And yes, I will admit these items did come from Civ Fanatics, but hey, we are a Civ podcast. We are. So I'll say number 10 now, and then we'll go on to our topic, and then whenever I feel like I haven't said anything for a while, I'll mention one of these other ones. Number 10 on my list, you nickname your friends after Civ producers so you can remember them. That's from Colonel. Over at Civ Fanatics.
I can see why that's 10.
Oh! The 4 expansion Beyond the Sword announced. Yay?
Yeah, looking forward to it.
All right, amen. Yeah.
I mean, because they did such a good job with Warlords doing something with the early part of the game. And now they're addressing the end game, which will be interesting because if you've seen some of the discussions on some of the forums, what you're noticing is that A lot of people stop playing their game when they get to the end game because they already know they've won. So it'll be interesting to see if this could revitalize some interest in what some people consider the boring part of the game, actually winning.
Yeah.
See, that's my favorite part of the game is when you can't research anymore. You came to come to some sort of end of line, and you go and destroy everybody, mostly AI.
It really gets tedious.
That's what I've got. I mean, you've got save buttons, and I mean, I'm not being ugly, but, you know, that way you can continue it at a later time. That's what I enjoy. I hate that running up on the wall and then not...
Well, it's got the Babylonians to start.
I really like the early part of the game the best is you're still exploring and beating the snot out of people using swords. I mean, lobbing nukes around takes kind of the fun out of it.
So do you think this expansion will have more to offer than the previous one?
I think they've learned a lot from the first expansion.
They claim it's the biggest expansion ever released.
Which is a typical release for most times to try to get you here. To purchase it.
Do they say it all the time?
Yeah.
Yeah, sounds like something crappy we'd write. Biggest in history! New! Exciting! Great! But if you look down to all the additions, they are going to be making some dramatic changes.
Amen.
It'll be interesting to see now that they're adding corporations. This ought to be fun.
I'm talking about that. Take your money and run, boys.
I hope they have advertising agencies.
Hey, that'd be a great... Ming, that'd be a great way to win... Being in the corporation, just taking your money. Hey, what happened to all my gold in my coffer? Well, it was an investment that didn't pan out for you. I win.
The CEO got it as a golden parachute. Bye.
I just got beat by Ming Incorporated.
You win! Can you see the victory movie there? Some guy with a bag full of money over his shoulders, flipping everybody the bird, going, I'm laughing all the way to the bank. You win!
Landing on his yacht and headed out to sea. That'd be good.
What do you guys think about the random events?
It's better than losing the game quicker because Montezuma doesn't like you.
I'm kind of glad we might have the option to turn those off. Because remember random events in Civ 1?
I actually liked them in Civ 1 because it always pissed my brother off.
Which is always good.
Well, I didn't mind when it pissed somebody else off, but when it pissed me off.
Are you talking about random events kind of like you see like in a Sim City where you'd have tornadoes or what?
Yeah, they said in the press release that natural disasters were going to be part of the event package.
Yeah, natural disasters, pleas for help, or demands from the citizens.
For help.
Which is kind of what you get now.
Very generic, huh?
Build a temple, you know.
Are they going to have a volcano like C3? I wonder.
That was pretty cool, you know.
Or earthquakes.
That seems to be what they're going to go at. There's going to be like random revolutions, probably random natural events, or that's what I seem to be getting from reading through everybody.
As long as it isn't like the AI entity and Call to Power, man, I never build that son of a gun. I got burned too many times. It was about 30 cities in one turn. In fact, when I play, I always exclude it.
Well, hopefully one of the random events won't be nuclear war, y'all lose, bye.
Hey, really?
No, but I could see, like, nuclear winter if you nuke your neighbor every time they tick you off.
A comet just hit the Earth. Game over. Bye.
Wouldn't that tick you off? You're, like, ready to launch your spaceship, and all of a sudden
the comet
just hit the Earth.
You're ready to win.
Or a union strike.
It's not even a big comet. It's, like, as big as a quarter and just... takes out your spaceship and nothing else.
Well, they did say they were going to have an earlier version of the UN. Now we can get voted out of the game even earlier.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, the Apostolic Palace.
Is that what they call it?
Yep.
What other information do you have on it in front of you?
None.
Says Apostolic Palace, the United Nations will become available earlier in the game, providing a way for players to win a diplomatic victory earlier. The new resolutions will also be added, which will expand the available diplomatic options.
They should have made that read, now you have an opportunity to lose the game quicker if nobody likes you.
I'll be lost round one, though.
So how many of the new civs do we know? Is they've confirmed three of them or four of them?
Babylonians. Portugal, Netherlands, and Native Americans.
Who's Babylon going to have? Nebuchadnezzar?
Hammurabi.
We don't know yet. I don't think it's been announced.
Hammurabi, I don't know.
We can speculate, of course.
Sitting Bull of the Native Americans.
I think they're bringing Abe Lincoln into the game.
So we know the 4 out of 10.
I wish we had that room with the advisors in it when I played Civ 2. Man, I used to love it when that, because I kind of thought he was like me in a way, was the military advisor would look over at somebody and then leave his little window to go thump on him or something. Come here.
Yeah. Well, I used to love later in the game when you had a big lead and he was a drunken slut at that point. He was just sitting there back.
That's what I'm talking about, Bruce. Come here.
We're winning. Go for it.
Well, we know about the drunk part. But slut? What?
He was always eyeing the diplomat.
How you doing? Yeah, it's good to see you, huh?
She was cute.
Yeah, she sure was. Many a night was spent. Sorry, back in focus.
We were younger back then.
Yes. Much. Haven't learned anything yet, but I'm trying.
Hey, now, this is a family-friendly show. Okay, now.
That's right. See, we're learning about how to use diplomacy, yeah, when it comes to drunks. No means no.
Does anybody know if you have Civ 4 and want to get the new expansion but don't have Warlords, is that going to work?
Ooh.
I don't think that question's been answered yet. If they do what they've done in the past, usually the latest expansion mode includes all the other expansion packs. So I would assume that Warlords would be integrated into the new package, but don't quote me on that. That's how they should do it. And if history is a track record, that's what they'll do.
They will bring 60 new leaders, so will be kind of natural to maybe add a couple of leader traits.
If they don't add leader traits, I'd be surprised. I mean, come on, that's half the fun. The real question is, which civilization are they going to nerf? I mean, between Warlords and Vanilla, we saw Catherine get her head handed to her. She went from being a great leader to a worthless leader. They just really wimped her out really nice. Who would they nerf now? Could it be the Romans? Still, when you listen to everybody, it's like, oh, the Praetorians, they're so tough. Yeah.
That's exactly right. Blah, blah, blah. They're not that tough.
Well, it's funny, when we were playing MP games before we went to random civs, we'd have like 6 Incas in the game because everybody wanted to be financial and industrious. Now we play random. It's more fun that way. Who are you next to? I'm next to the Incans. Who are you next to? The Incans. Who are you next to? The Incans.
What color Incans are you next to?
Yeah. Well, those are the purple Incans. I'm the yellow Incans. We stopped that foolishness.
I guess there's going to be 12 new scenarios, including themes never before explored in Civ. I guess we can only really speculate on those at this point, except for those in the know who but cannot say.
Well, they do say in the press release that some of the scenarios are going to be from the Civ fan community.
Well, yeah, it's cheaper that way.
Does that mean that they're already out somewhere?
Give the fans what they want.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was pretty underwhelmed with the Warlord scenarios, quite honestly.
Really? Mm-hmm. Really? Because I kind of liked the Genghis Khan scenario. I thought that was a lot of fun.
That was a good scenario.
And the Barbarian one was a riot.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that was. I enjoyed that.
Well, that's true. That was true. Those were good.
Those are probably my 2 favorite scenarios.
Yeah, the Alexander the Great scenario, that one was not
good
at
all. Oh, that was awful. I think. It was absolutely... Well, wait a minute. Somebody that write it, are they on the chat? Okay, no, it was awful.
So what about these 5 new wonders we've got coming in? Want to speculate on the effects?
That's a good idea. The ones listed are Statue of Zeus, Cristo Redentor, Shwedagon Paya, the Mausoleum of Mausolus, and the Maui statues. All pronounced very wrong.
I was about to say, are they going to come with pronunciation guides?
Yeah. We just got one. Somebody was mentioning in a post at Poly about the last wonder you just mentioned, how it caused the people to commit suicide, or is that, am I?
Yeah, to trash their civilization.
Okay.
So what else are they adding? We're going to get wonders. We're going to get more civs. It's going to be great. It's going to be powerful. It's going to be new. What else are they saying going to be included?
Advanced starts.
I like that. But you can go ahead and start in modern or industrial or wherever.
How many people like to do that? As I said earlier, I'm a fan of the early part of the game. I find that the most interesting. Are people really bored with the early part of the game and they're looking for excitement, like instant gratification?
Well, I guess I would do it just so that I could see the adventures instead of sitting and playing through the whole game.
What, instead of losing before you get to it?
Yeah, because I
see. Loser.
Join my club.
Well, you can already start on different time periods. I think that's already in the original game. But also what it says in the press release, I guess I'm the official press release reader, it says, Advanced Starts, a major fan request. This new feature will enable players to buy components of a custom-tailored empire and begin play in the later part of the game, allowing them to experience many of the new features of the expansion in a shorter amount of time.
Wimps. Start from the beginning.
Tell us how you feel.
You don't hold anything back.
Have I ever held anything back, Dan? So, as long as it doesn't require more video capabilities, I can't wait.
That's what my weekend's comprised of. As I work all week, and when I get a chance to relax, I'm in front of my mega nuclear-powered computer, and I tell my baby doll, leave me be, unless we have something to do. That's my bass boat. I tell her, hey, I'm going to be right here, honey. You go do what you want. You got a set of keys. Here's a credit card. Enjoy yourself, baby. I love you. I'm right here.
Yeah, my daughter's cute. She goes, leave daddy alone. He's blowing up the world. You had some great topics there, like, you know, a nice board transfer to another company, huh?
Oh, yeah. Take-Two Interactive, board overthrown. Yeah.
Big surprise there.
But that was no fun, though. It was bloodless. Did you notice that? It went over...
20 minutes. They said 20 minutes it was done. Nobody had anything to say negative. Anyone who owns at least one share of Take-Two stock was admitted into the building. Each nominee would hold office until the company's next financial meeting, according to representatives from Oppenheimer Funds who nominated them.
Are there any other nominations for directors?
Chairman, I'm Emmanuel Ferrer of Oppenheimer Funds. The beneficial holder of over 17 million shares of common stock.
The chair recognizes you. Please go on.
I hereby nominate for election the board of directors of the following slate: Charles Dorman, Benjamin Fetter, John F. Levy, John J. Moses, Michael J. Sharefsky, and Strauss Zelnick, each of whom would elected, if elected, hold office for a term expiring at the company's next annual meeting. And I hereby move for a vote on the election. Each of the nominees is present and has agreed to stand for the election to the board of directors.
They take to announce the result of the shareholders' vote, and all six newly nominated board director candidates were approved. Taking on the role of chairman will be Zelnick, former CEO of BMG Entertainment and Crystal Dynamics. Grover C. Brown, who is an independent director, was also elected to the board of directors in a meeting following the shareholders' meeting, bringing the total number of members on the new board of directors to 7. Take-Two's management has suffered a high number of high-profile setbacks. The most notorious misstep was the inclusion of hidden, sexually-themed minigames in its best-selling Grand Theft Auto, San Andreas.
Well, one of the biggest investor groups is the Sisters of St. Joseph.
Oh, yeah, this is a great stuff.
The Sisters of St. Joseph that called for consideration of social responsibility and environmental performance as well as the financial performance of the company in setting executive compensation. So basically got some nuns telling people that they don't like Grand Theft Auto.
Why we should care? Is that in there somewhere?
Yeah, that was on the GameSpot thread. Why should we care about the overhaul of the board of directors? Well, this Zelnick guy, I heard of BMG Entertainment, but I hadn't heard of this Crystal Dynamics. I don't know if anybody else had before this story. They're a California-based video game developer that I guess are best known for being entrusted with the Tomb Raider franchise since 2003.
Lara Croft.
Mm.
But again, what does this really mean? I mean, why should we care as gamers? Does this mean they're going to have better games, or just means they're not going to start, you know, keep putting porn in their games? I mean, what is this?
Well, I think it's actually good news because Oppenheimer Funds initiated the whole change, and Take-Two is listed in their value mutual funds, which are basically mutual funds that are lower priced than what they think they should be. So because of the Take-Two scandal, they moved them to the value funds, and then they changed the board so that the stock would go up in value, which ultimately should translate to better games for us and better sales for Take-Two.
Or basically more profits for stockholders.
That's what I'm talking about, bottom line.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm still hoping that it'll have some impact for us, the gamers, instead of basically my stock portfolio.
But you know what? If it doesn't, it will be reported. You know that radio station that first leaked this was? You know what the name of that station was? It was a WGRA. Y'all ever heard of that? Yeah, so who gives a rat's? I mean, that's. I'm telling you, folks, they don't. They can give a flip about us consumers. You know why? Because we're sheeple. We're going to fall behind. Okay, let me buy another game because, after all, new shareholders, new this, same old end product. I don't care what you eat when it comes out. It could look like and taste like. If y'all remember the great Cheech and Chong, good thing we don't step in it. If y'all remember that.
As an advertiser, as an advertising guy, I'm offended. As a consumer, I'm laughing my ass off.
Don't share inside tricks. That's an antitrust violation, Grandpa Troll. Don't share inside information, how it's done.
I'm not really surprised it didn't last more than 20 minutes. I mean, this group, Oppenheimer Funds led, they held 46%. They represented 46% of the shareholders. I think it was pretty well a foregone conclusion. But I would like to think that this will help the company in the long run, because this annual shareholders meeting was delayed a week because the current, now ousted executive, wanted another week to try to come up with an alternate plan, which could have included selling the company. And those discussions broke down, and there was talk about, well, they might have to offload the Civ franchise, and now Firaxis is owned by Take-Two Interactive, being a wholly owned subsidiary, so perhaps they might sell off Firaxis and some of their other developers, which could have been a potential issue, and a bad one at that. So why should gamers care? I guess for what could have been. And hopefully this is a turnaround for the company because, you know, they've had some pretty rough couple of years.
You know why the meeting took 20 minutes? Because it was held on a Friday. Them boys ready to go home for the weekend. You let that meeting get held on a Monday, them boys say, boys, we're going to use this all. We're going to look at, bring them my reports in for the last quarter. We want to show you why we're having this daggone meeting. I'm going to tell you something right now. Where's that analyst? Come here. You tell us what these figures all mean down here. If you look at line 4, page 2, if you'll notice the return on investment did not peak in the second quarter like we anticipated it to do. So, you know, that's the reason why it was short. Luke, okay, vote pass, let's cruise. Boys, I got to catch a flight home. Yeah, me and the little missus going to take a little trip this weekend. Them boys was going to, that was a stamp done deal before it started.
Yeah, can we hurry this up? I've got a tea time.
That's right. Not like for you folks from across the water. Good eye, Marty. You have a little some warm tea. I mean, a tea time is in a four coming at ya. You know, Caddyshack type tea time. I just want to make sure we're speaking the same lingo here.
So Dan, thanks for putting that in proper perspective. Because really, unless it affects what we play as games. What is it? Who gives a rat's ass?
That's right, WGRA.
Where is that? Is that a real radio station? Are you kidding?
Yeah, it is. I swear.
Got news? Email news at apolton.net or send a private message to Dan Q, Illuminatus, Snoopy369, or Grandpa Troll via Apolton's forums at apolton.net/forums.
So, Dan, what's number 9?
Number 9 on the top 10 clues, and you are too obsessed with Civilization 4. You've played so many games that you had to buy a new hard drive to make room for the save files.
Got that one on the control.
Did that.
That one's from Randall.
Also at Civ Fanatics, I would assume.
Yes, they're all from Civ Fanatics.
That explains it.
So this isn't really much of a polycast, is it? It's more of a CFC cast.
That'd be enough for you, sit down.
Can we remove him from the conversation?
Please. What's this button over here for? Oops.
Lost another one. Who else wants to speak up on behalf of CFC?
Welcome to the Modcast, where we talk about hot issues in the forums.
The Modcast topic was forgotten resources over at CFC.
That was the most forgotten thread. I tried reading through that one. I really did. What a bunch of losers in that thread.
Well, they were all mods.
Send all hate mail to...
Well, wait a minute. It's just like they were starting to debate the value of bananas. Now,
at least they were frogs.
Oh, please. I don't want to hear about frogs.
Me neither.
Now, blasting the banana, that was blasphemy. That's true. Right.
That's true. But, you know, it's like, okay, should we have had rubber or not? Oh, joy. You know, but I think they included that under the oil.
That's right.
Since it is a petroleum product. What the hell are they talking about? They can only have so many resources in the game. I'm sure we could probably have fun if we came up with another thread about the really forgotten resources.
The human mind.
I think one interesting thing that did come up there, though, was the idea of a resource that would affect one thing positively and another thing negatively, like tobacco increasing happiness but decreasing health.
Increasing happiness?
Increasing happiness is a luxury but decreasing health.
Okay, so there's an interesting concept. You are correct.
It would have to decrease happiness if you lost it, of course.
I had forgotten there was some intelligent discussion.
Yeah, when you say increased happiness.
Yeah, that's true. That's right. Yeah. It'd be great. Instead of going in and bombing their oil resources, going in and bombing their tobacco resources, the cities revolt.
I'll be history in Carolina.
Oh, we need to have the booze resource then, too. Alcohol, you know?
I think that's what that thread actually turned into, was which kind of beer would your civ have?
That's right.
I'm glad I didn't read through the entire thread. Did anybody else see any good nuggets in there?
No, that was pretty much it.
Go bananas, yes. Potassium. When they start discussing the advantages of potassium in the system, it's time to stop reading the thread, I'll tell you.
Yeah. What's CFC have to say? Also, I mean, you said we were going over what they had for the top 10 list of reasons that you're a Civ fanatic or something.
Yeah, what's number eight?
Give us number eight, Dan.
Oh, that's a cue for number eight? All right. Number eight, you often use the pickup line, I change my Civic options for you.
Yeah, they don't work on my wife, okay?
Only if I went to a dictatorship would she agree to that.
You know that line doesn't work at all.
I think there's
maybe you're just going to the wrong place. That's
there's actually like six women on the face of the planet who would actually understand that.
Oh, come on. There'd be at least 10 or 12 if you look at our membership.
Welcome to the Research Lab, where we explore game concepts or ideas that are not in Civilization yet, but they might be in the future.
The Research Lab.
Minefields! Did you read anything more inane in your life? The nice thing about it was I like how the symbol would still be there, so you wouldn't know it was a minefield. Duh!
I know.
Did everybody else read through that exciting thread?
Yeah.
So how about a simple hand vote? Who would like to see a concept like minefields implemented in the game?
Bing, this is not a visual medium, I just thought you know.
That's the point.
You know, you could say yes or no in your microphone if you wanted to.
And that would be technically a hand vote.
What a rough crowd.
Hand vote.
Okay, next.
Would anybody like to vocalize their opinion on minefields?
I'd like to see them in forests. You think about it. Where the different terrains you put them in have different effects. Claymores on hills from the opposite direction you're traveling on, you wouldn't have as good a chance to see them. You put bouncing Bettys in the tree lines so what they be really effective on troops versus your units, like your mechanized infantry units and so forth. I'm talking about if you have a little bit of history with that type of explosive ordnance, you could maybe strap an explorer or something with explosives and send them all. And then, that's a possibility, folks.
Well, what did people generally think of the idea? I mean, are you guys in favor of having minefields?
I would like to see them.
Well, no, it's fortifications as it is, right?
Fortifications, right. That's...
They've made them so worthless. Without zone of control, unless you have a choke point, who cares?
That's right.
Yeah, and we actually talked about forts in just a previous podcast episode, and we too came to the conclusion that they were worthless.
Just bypass them if they're sitting in the middle of nowhere. Just, how you doing? Keep on going.
Oh, that's a nice fort I'm walking past.
But you can't tell where a minefield is.
Well, with minefields, one of the posters in the thread over at CFC suggested a maintenance cost, but, I mean, that's a pretty slippery slope. I mean, if this improvement's going to have a maintenance cost, what about the others?
And how about this? How about you have unhappiness associated with multiple occurring mines? In other words, if a mine goes off on one of your sets of troops and then another one word gets around that there's minefield in there, your troops maybe not as committed to taking that town that they headed to, or they're going to slow down their movements because they're going to be more cautious instead of just marching on up there and, like Mr. Ming says, using the cannons to lob rounds at it and try to take the game out. If the minefield did what they do in real life, which is what we're trying to emulate here, then they would cause psychological effect, and then you have to build improvements for that. Just a small input on it.
Well, I kind of like one of the posters that suggested there would be a happiness hit in the city if you built minefields within the big fat cross.
Well, yeah, it opens up a random event, and you wind up...
Hey, they're going out to the fields to work today. Oh, they're not coming back.
You wind up blowing up your citizens instead of the enemy troops, and it is a random event.
That's what I'm talking about. Oh, can you go get some apples? Yeah. Anybody else want to complain about conditions around here?
Yeah, do that a couple of times and you'll come off as quail at the end of the game.
Another poster, Grav, doesn't believe that such an improvement should inflict damage, but rather he thinks if there's an improvement like a minefield, it will immediately end a unit's turn when it's entered and give a negative defensive value for that terrain. You know, giving an invaded country time to counterattack on the units unlucky enough to be stuck in the fields for one turn, but personally I think we should just stick with the inflicting damage part.
Yeah, a mine blows things up.
I think minefield should be more fun in shooter type of games.
They were in 007, GoldenEye.
You know, running, shooting, blowing things.
Oh, that's a reason to
around, but for Civ...
A little frag fest.
I'm not sure about Civ. Minefields. Wow.
I think you had the suggestion, Bruce, about the unhappiness.
Yes, I haven't. Other words, if you're the attacking force and I'm the defending force, and I have minefields set up, depending on what type of minefields they allow you to do, hopefully multiple different types because they have different effects on them. Claymores, actually, the whole deal behind claymores is to divide the troops, not just to disable them. It's a half round or a kind of a quarter round object, ball bearings, steel ball bearings, and of course you can put shrapnel, anything you want in it, and what that does is it separates a column, and then you bounce some Bettys come up, and they actually shoot up about 3 feet off the ground, or you could probably go up 4 foot off the ground perhaps, and then they just pause for a second, and then just blow up. So basically what you're doing is you're taking off from the upper chest to the head area is where all the it's being afflicted. So if you have different types of mines and you come into a field, then if it happens once or twice or three times in a row to your troops, then the other people attacking, you got to stop and think about this. Dang, is this really worth pursuing? I'm talking about, and I'm not talking about the human player. I'm talking about the unhappiness level on the attacking forces. I really think that should be, because you don't go in war and just say, run, run, run. And they just fall over, and say, let's just keep going, boys. Why? Because the captain said to do it. Okay. You know, you don't do that. You it actually affects your happiness level and your concentration.
Well, actually, you're trying to introduce troop morale then at this point.
That's right. I'm talking about troop morale as far as the attacking. That's what I meant by happiness, your troop morale. And, of course, you know, you could also look into your overall happiness of your civilization. Hey, man, we got 100,000 troops fixing to overrun. What do you mean we got 60,000? What happened to the other 40,000? Got mined. Ooh.
That sounds like the American population.
That's what I'm talking about. Hey, I'm serious now. They can't beat us on a one-on-one knockdown drag out. This is a total different concept on war. I think about Black Hawk Down. That was a terrible situation our troops had never been put into. We thought we had them outnumbered, and we got our tukas waxed.
Yeah, improvised explosive devices, the roadside bombs, are different to mines. How do you simulate that?
How would you simulate it? You could have... like I say, you could have one type of a mine that you would be only, say, used against troops. One type of mine could be used against vehicles. One type of, you could also have, the mine would have different effects. If it was in forest, in other words, you get your forest, you could actually attach these to the trees so that they're angled down to the troops, and you trip a wire, and then it comes from above them. Now, people are not going to be looking in the trees for mines unless you're a hardened veteran. But, I mean, you're most of them are looking for the ground where you're walking at, and if there's something that will trip an alarm or trip something that would come from above you, that would be one. On the ground would be another. You'd have to set them on. You don't have to have roadways. You could have them just off of the roadways so that if you had a scout going out, it would kill the scout. Of course, you have to have the question, are these reusable mines? Well, in real life, they're not. Most of them are one-shot, one-time deal, so you'd have to rebuild them. And you wouldn't have time to do that if there's 10 troop movements coming down the road at you and one of them trips this off and blows it up, then the player wouldn't take long before he realizes, wait a minute, I'll send one single troop down this road. When it blows him up, I'm KD bar to the door. I'm through. I'm in like Flynn.
We have suicide scouts for that.
Well, I think you're viewing mines, though, as like a single entity. If you figure the square is a large square, we would say that there are a lot of mines there.
That's right.
So while some of the mines may have been triggered, because I think one of the people introduced the fact that the first group that moved through would take like 100% damage.
That's
the
right.
Group 75, the next group 50, and then after that it would be all over because eventually all the mines would have been blown up.
That's right.
You know, looking at a larger perspective, it wasn't a bad way of looking at it. I think it was a pretty well thought out thing.
That's exactly right. Because as you go through, you may take out one mine set off, may set off an occasional war. So that divides the troop. Again, so like when I first started this conversation about the mines, that the claim was they divide the troops up. So what do? They scatter. Well, they're intentionally scattered for a reason, to put the troops into the tree lines. When they go into the tree lines, they're not looking for other mines to not trip off. They're looking to cover their butts so they don't. So the mines that are going off don't kill them. Well, they're actually being driven right into a field of fire of other mines. So, eventually you would clear all the mines out through attrition is what you'd end up doing.
I see. Would you also see, like, for example, the unhappiness factor? If you were the defending civ and you put a mine, say, within a city radius, would you also see an unhappiness factor perhaps for your own citizens, for the fact that, you know, what's going on right outside our door?
Well, especially when Johnny didn't come home tonight. No kidding. He wandered in the minefields.
That's right. I think there should be something, because the closer the attacking forces or the oppressors come to you, that means that the more the chances are increasing that they're going to at least they're going to get inside your defensive position. So it should have some sort of maybe I won't say riot, but it should have some sort of a where you're going to have to address the happiness of the people, because you can't. It'd be like Baghdad. What was that? Baghdad Bob? No, the infidel Americans are not here. And then you look over his shoulder, and there the American troops are. You know, it would definitely have to be some sort of a penalty for the civilization that has the mines.
I would like to add something about Free Civ. Free Civ does have a minefield function. Well, to be true, it's rarely used, but we do have a function where you can change a terrain into a sort of a minefield, and the minefield function in the same ways as a terrain that crosses the ocean. There's also a chance that it sinks, and that's the same thing that happens when a unit enters that minefield.
How did you build it into the game? What was your vision of minefields when you put Free Civ together?
Well, basically, with terrain, I mean, there's a special terrain set up as a minefield, and that minefield can have an option to have a kill rate of 10, 20, 30, 40, 50%. And the way it functions is, when you move on the terrain, there's a chance that your unit will die. It's as simple as that. And the way you create this terrain is by putting a settler or an engineer on it. That will create a minefield, in the same way you would create a forest or road or something like that. And that's basically the function that the minefield has.
Why don't you think it was being used very much?
This function isn't included in FreeZFS standard. It's more sort of a proof of concept that someone came up with.
It was more a lack of knowledge than whether it was tactically a good thing to do.
Hmm. I suppose you could even add another dimension where there might be a slight possibility that even if you set a minefield, if you move a unit of your own into it afterwards, I don't know if you can focus on difficulty levels, that your own unit would accidentally trip it. So there's another, like, do I really want to put this minefield here?
It happens.
Well, that was one of the interesting, they discussed that in the thread as well. They said that since the square would look like any other square, the person that placed the minefield better remember where he put it.
It should, but the person should. I would enter this. The civilization that set the mines should have some sort of advantage. It's kind of like when you have a subversive unit that can see other subversive units. Okay.
Advantage, but you're the one who put that minefield there in the first place. You should know where it is hidden.
You're assuming competency.
Right. That's why I said it shouldn't be everybody, but you should have some sort of advantage. Not a 100% free walk, because you're right. I agree. Competency.
Well, if you're a smart player, you'll just mark the tile right when you lay the mines down.
Yeah, everybody forgets that you can mark squares, yeah. So what else is on your list there, Dan?
Number 7. You draw a line at the entrance to your cubicle at work, and every time a coworker crosses it, you scream at them, "Get back! I haven't signed an open borders agreement with you yet!"
You know, when you started it, it sounded like it was going to be a good one.
It could happen.
Elliot didn't laugh.
Never mind.
Okay, so number 8 I said before, that was from Super Beaver Inc., and number 7 was from Nex Ushifer. I don't know, I don't care. Okay. Welcome to the Senate. In this section, we talk about game strategy.
So what do you want to discuss next, Dan? What's next on the hit list?
All right, next on the hit list, we go over to our Senate section.
Right.
Great people mechanics and use guidelines from a thread at both Civ Fanatics and Bolton.
They say the same thing. It depends on your game situation. There is no set way you should be using your great people. You have to use them based on what your situation is.
That's right.
Well, 8 times out of 10, build them into the city.
I never used the great people for Golden Ages. Never.
8 times out of 10, you want a great super specialist. It's going to give you the most benefit for the longest period of time.
Oh, I have never used one for a Golden Age unless it was accidental.
Accidental?
Syndrome.
Well, sometimes you hit the wrong button.
Oh, see? Oh, come on. That's why you save your game. That's why you save your game every turn, so if that happens, then you just reload and you didn't make that mistake. Now, come on.
Reload?
No, it's...
What's a reload?
Hey, you play Iron Man. You save when you go to bed.
It's called
that's
strategy.
It. You make a mistake.
Strategy,
live
man.
With it. Live with it. Yeah, strategy. Reset. That's really good strategy. I bet you play a deity, too, and you claim you win.
You can reload turns?
That's whips.
Wow.
I just like getting you going. That doesn't take much.
Well, you know, that's why I like MP so much. If you make a mistake, you're stuck with it. None of this, oh, I guess I'll just reload. I guess maybe I shouldn't declare war on Monty when he had 26 units on me.
So the game crashes, so the game ends, right?
Well, I think a lot of people agree that it's best to settle them, especially how you settle them. How many people use them to get that, you know, wonderful holy city? There's a good use for one, if it's good spread religion. And that'll get you more benefit than if you just place the great person in the city.
I've never used a great person to discover a technology, either.
Some people suggest you should use it to light bulb key if you're going to do some slings, like the philosophy sling. But I'm with you, Dan. Usually, by the science that pops up, it's like, great, 5 turns. I'd rather place them in my city.
Well, if it's late in the game, it's better to use the light bulb than it is to settle them, because you're not going to get as much use out of them otherwise.
Correct. Law of diminishing returns at that point.
exactly.
Just like placing a merchant. It's like, you know, you can get a lot of gold over time, but if you can get that 4,000 instant hit, you know, how many years are you going to be able to take advantage of that great merchant within a city?
Wait, you mean great artists?
No, the great merchants. Great artists I use, because I love culture bombs. Especially in MP, where you move it right up next to the guy's border and steal access to key strategic resources. Great artists are some of the most powerful of the great
people. Oh, I just heard you say 4,000, and I immediately went to the 4,000.
Oh, you were thinking 4,000.
Yeah.
Wonderful culture. I was talking about if you get a 4,000 trade route.
Oh, I'm with you.
Just about the time you want to upgrade all your cavalry gunships.
Oh, well, actually, I think with great merchants, it's almost a 50-50 for me if I'm going to either establish a trade mission or actually use that for the plus one food. I mean, if I've got any stagnant growing cities or especially ones that are starving, I mean, the merchant to use for that is just invaluable. No other great person's going to give you that.
Yeah, but the gold is good too. Don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
Especially if you're short.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that especially if you...
Gold is always good.
Oh, yeah. If you got a deficit, or perhaps you like, oh, I should really be upgrading my units because I'm in trouble. Oh, yeah. But as we said before, it all depends on the circumstances.
Well, I'll tell you, the great profits are really great in that early part of the game when you're starting to expand and that, like, plus 3 or 4 gold per turn in that city is big. It allows you to build another city sometimes. So what do people think is the most powerful of the great people? Is it the engineers? You can build an instant wonder?
Engineer. I like the engineer.
Yeah, definitely the engineer.
Nah, I have to go with the great artist.
The great scientist for the academy in your science city.
All good answers, which shows how well-designed the great person's concept really was. Each of them does serve their purposes. Which is the wimpiest of the great people?
I'd have to go with Prophet.
Yeah, especially in the late game.
Oh, in the late game, yeah, Prophets are worthless. They're worthless. Again, I think they're making a social statement that religion stinks in the mind.
Hey, read the Bible.
Send all hate mail.
Read the Bible. Religion stuck in the old ages, according to some people, too. I mean, I'm just sharing. You know, they've had problems with religion all throughout eternity. So, but you're right. I think
that hate mail can now go to somebody
right.
else.
But seriously, I think it is. That does make a statement. It's like the televangelist who called the power. You know, they had a slick looking dude. Man, I tell
you, I love that.
Yeah, man. I was like, way to go. Thank you, Jimmy Swagger. You know,
they were making a social statement there. I think
that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number 6. Someone asks you the name of the current Egyptian leader, and you say Hatshepsut.
That's good. I like that. That's good.
I'm glad you approve.
Who wrote it?
That comes...
Give him some credit, Dan. Come on. Look at the cue cards.
It's from Tal-Isk Angaru.
G'day, mate. What'd you say?
I didn't make that up, I swear. Tal-Isk Angaru.
So what's next? Monasteries. Build or no? The key question, do you need monasteries?
Yes.
And actually, if you look through all the replies, everybody was pretty sane about it. I mean, there was such insightful comments.
Indeed. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to interrupt you right there, because guess who just came online, gentlemen?
Who? Who? Tell us, Dan.
Makalua.
Makalua. How you doing there?
Who prefers to go by Mackie. I'll just tell everyone that before she gets here. Mackie!
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Mackie.
Hello.
There wasn't really much intelligent discussion in the thread, because what it came down to is, gee, if I need science, I build monasteries. If I need to spread a religion, I do too. If I don't, I don't.
Very good.
Case closed. I mean, come on. And this went on for, like, how many posts? And everybody.
It's yet more micromanaged.
QFT. Yeah, QFT. Plus one.
Plus one.
Yeah, there we go.
In stereo.
But not the post count.
The problem with monasteries is you need multiple religions, which means other people can spy in the cities, which isn't worth 10% science, quite frankly.
Well, you know what they do with MP, don't you? We leave all of our troops outside the city. So they see one archer in it, and they go, good, I'm going to go get it. Then they show up, and there's 22 cavalry there.
In a monastery?
Note to self, trick your mirror for the Saturday.
Well, with, no, if you can, that's with the holy city. So he's talking about the spread of religion as an overall theme of discussion here, since monasteries aren't really talking about. And he raises a valid point. In MP, some people don't want religions to spread because people can see it in their cities. Other people say, great, let them look into my cities because they're not going to see what's outside the city. And it really leads for a lot of fun situations.
So you're having Calvary outside the city is what you're saying?
Yeah, you leave a few crappy units in the city, and your neighbor who has the holy city can see into that city, and he's thinking, oh joy, an easy city to take. What he doesn't see is the massive stack of death you have right behind the city.
So what religion again is the Calvary, the sect of the split hoof? I tell you what, I'm enjoying
this. You've been drinking early. So what else can we say about monasteries? What's good about them?
They let you build missionaries if you don't feel like running organized religion.
Exactly. How many people run organized religion?
Well, when it's the only
in America,
other religion.
A lot.
Our religion is organized. When?
Thank you very much.
Hey, this isn't real life. Come on now.
It isn't?
That's right.
Polish. I'm real life.
What's number five, Dan?
Number five. When walking on tiles, you step only on the center of the tile because units can't be in between squares.
How did that get to number five?
Oh, come on!
That's from Atropos.
Don't step on a crack, it'll break your mother's back, you know.
And that made it up to number five, huh?
Wow.
Yep.
I'm on the edge of my seat. Go ahead.
See, I can't wait. I can't wait for one through four.
Four through one.
So what's next on the hit list, Dan? We're having so much fun with
Minecraft. Do you want to hear number four first?
Yes.
Top 10
Please.
Clues that you're too obsessed with Civilization for?
Yeah.
All right. Number four. They used your daughter's picture for the Civinon advertisements.
Yeah, Beator's father shouldn't use his daughter's picture. No.
That was from Joe3Blah. I don't know where they come up with these handles, but anyway.
What's number three, Dan?
Number three. Again, top 10 clues that you are too obsessed with Civilization 4. You ask a random person on the street if religion should have been included.
God, I hope number two and one are better.
That's from Creighton. Hey, now. I also have an honorable mention list, and there are quite a few on there. Some of those I actually originally had on the list, because this thread was 40-some-odd pages, and the number of clues was well over 1,000. So I read through them all just for you.
And these were the best you could find?
It's so easy to criticize and bring someone down. No, I'm just kidding.
That's half the fun.
I know. Wow.
That's true. Yeah, we got mail.
And it wasn't spam.
That was the other surprise.
Call in today in North America, 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44-20-7871-7659. That's 44-20-7871-POLY. Or Skype us directly through using Skype from Skype.com. Direct your calls to the Polycast.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on the show, including how to write in, where to find the official Polycast forum, and how to subscribe to the RSS feed, log on to the official Polycast website at polycast.apolton.net. Type more quietly.
Yeah, damn. Seriously.
That is nasty.
That's what my freaking keyboard makes, damn it.
Well, I still have from the top 10 clues that you're too obsessed with Civilization 4.
Oh, yeah. Come on, Dan, do that one.
We've been waiting all day for these, please.
Number two and number one. In number two, from Phoenix underscore 56721. When every third thought you have is no longer about sex, but about Civ 4.
Okay, family site.
Dan, what kind of precedent are you setting here?
Sick puppies.
Yeah, really, I mean, like, I can remember when I used to think about things other than Civ, but that's been years ago, and it's like, I'm old. Yeah.
It's amazing what happens when you get older.
I forget other things that happen. I used to, but anyways, moving on. Yeah.
What's number one?
Number one. That was amazing. No, that's not the first. That's not number one. Number one. Instead of saying one more minute, you start to say one more turn.
Oh, didn't see that one coming. Very good. I like that one.
At least you had one good one out of ten.
Oh, hey, now you like this. I thought you said you liked the Sivanon advertisement one.
That's true. That's true. So two out of ten. So, Dan, do you have some snappy way that you end these, or do you just, like,
open them? End it. We're just getting warmed up, folks.
Well, you know, it has been criticized, let's say, that nobody listens to the show except for the hosts. Well, that's not true.
We just spread the fan base.
Yes, you have 10 people on it. It means you'll have a bigger audience.
Yeah, well, yes, if that's true. I mean, we've only increased the audience by, like, what, 3 or 4 times now? Just one episode. I'm pretty good.
Amen.
Oh, I can see the PR release now. Listenership increases by 300%.
No. It's by fan request.
Yes, by fan request. More podcasts. Somebody asked for another podcast.
You got more insomniacs on the board.
When you're awake at 2 a.m., we have something for you. It's better than no-dos.
And just in case anyone is wondering, yes, this episode will have a witty title just like all the other ones do.
I hope you're going to put more effort into it.
You know what? I already have a working title, which probably means that's what I'll end up using.
Are you going to frighten us now, or are you going to save it for surprises later?
I was going to frighten you now, actually, if it's all right with you.
Yeah, I want to hear this.
Since we're here primarily, but not entirely, to talk about the next Civ 4 expansion pack, Beyond the Sword, coming this July, I don't even think we mentioned that, did we?
Yeah, we did.
We did?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. good for us. So again, because of that, and the fact that this is the 12th episode, this episode title will be Beyond the Dozen.
Took that off your top 10 list, didn't you?
Their top 10 list for episode title.
So thank you all for joining us for an exciting podcast from the Apollo series.
It's been cool.
Episode 12, featuring the likes of Daniel Quick, Sid.
Goodbye, Dan.
Custis is also joining us today. Say goodbye, Custis.
Bye bye.
The Talent Turner. Say goodbye to us, please.
Goodbye to us, please.
You there, Snotty? Why don't you say goodbye to the loyal audience?
Bye.
Mackie, thanks for joining us, even though it was late. We really appreciate it.
Yes, well, I do like to be fashionably late.
You are a fool.
In case you people didn't already know.
If they haven't figured that by now, they're dead. And on that note, this is Ming signing off from another exciting episode of Polycast. Have a good day.
Record date March 31st, 2007. Soundtrack courtesy Civilization IV and the Warlords Expansion Pack. Copyright 2007, Apollo Civilization site at apollo.net.